Welcome to your weekly astrological weather. This is your place to get practical guidance for not only surviving, but thriving with the cosmic tides.
Hello, this is Joe G, Astrology Hub's podcast producer, and today I'm here to let you know that Ruling Planets for Unruly Times is officially open for enrollment. This is a three-week course led by Christopher, where you will delve deep into the meanings of the planets through history and myth, and you even get to know which one of those planets is your personal celestial guide. You'll receive 12 units of lessons in both video and audio format with transcripts and even an excerpt from the original Ruling Planets book. And you might also even want to know that you do get to hang out with Christopher on a Q&A live session where one lucky student will even get their chart read. If you want to learn more, all you have to do is go to astrologyhub.com/rulingplanets. I'll see you there.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to your weekly astrological weather. My name's Amanda Poole Walsh. I'm the founder of Astrology Hub, and I am so thrilled to be here today with the amazing, incredible, one of the favorite astrologers here at Astrology Hub, author, historian, and astrologer, Christopher Renstrom. We're going to be covering the astrology of the week of May 1st through the 7th. And for those of you that don't know Christopher, I just want to tell you a little bit about him. He's the creator of rulingplanets.com, an online subscription-based interactive astrology magazine based on his best-selling book, Ruling Planets. Renstrom has been practicing astrology since 1985. He currently writes the weekly horoscope for us at Astrology Hub, and he also stars in our weekly show, Horoscope Highlights. He created the horoscope column for Allure magazine. His Renstrom's horoscopes were carried on Verizon, Sprint, and Altel, and he conceived and developed Ask the Astrologer for Lifetime TV. And, well, so many other things, Christopher. I'm realizing newest books aren't even mentioned here.
Well, busy.
Tell us about your newest books then also.
Yeah. Well, the newest books that came out are Cosmic Calendar and Rise and Shine. And Cosmic Calendar, I was privileged and honored to be able to produce as a show for Astrology Hub. And that's basically a deep dive into the zodiac signs and their connection to the calendar. And it also introduces a technique of how to turn your horoscope into your own personal calendar so that you can suss out your good times of year and your bad times of year. Based pretty much on where the sun is in the sky as it's traveling through the four seasons that we all experience. And then the second book is Rise and Shine. It's about the rising sign. Again, what I wanted to make it dependent on is the sun. A lot of times people say, oh, sun signs, you know, the sun is extremely important. Like, for instance, if we didn't have it in the middle of our solar system, we'd be rocketing off to the far corners of the galaxy because there would be no gravitational center holding us together. Well, the sun does the same thing in your astrological chart. And so the rising sign is based on where the sun is. It continues the theme of the sun. What I was working with was this idea that the rising sign itself is the facial expression of your astrological chart. It's not a role or a persona you put on. It's the chart. It's the chart's face. It's the way that it expresses itself. And that features 144 sun sign, rising sign combinations. I figured somebody had to do it. So
may as well be you. You are a prolific writer, and we're so grateful for all the different ways that you help to make astrology accessible and fun and playful and educational. And I know that our audience that tunes into the horoscope highlights every week just adores you and gets so much out of your weekly transmissions there. And Christopher is teaching a course with us. It is open for enrollment right now, and it is Ruling Planets for Unruly Times. You can register for that at astrologyhub.com/rulingplanets. And we'll tell you more about that class towards the end of the weekly weather, but if you know that you love Christopher as a teacher, if you want to have a live experience with him as your teacher, then this is the time to do it. AstrologyHub.com/rulingplanets. All right. So Christopher, let's talk about the week ahead. What is the overarching theme?
The overarching theme of the week ahead is really the lunar eclipse, which is going to be taking place pretty much at 15 degrees Scorpio. And this is a very, very powerful eclipse. All eclipses are powerful, but it is taking place in the zodiac sign of Scorpio. So Scorpio is ruled by two planets. That's the way that I work with a ruling planet. It's the planet that rules the sign. And if you're born under the sign of Scorpio, you happen to have two ruling planets, and they will be Mars and Pluto. Pluto is the modern ruler of Scorpio, and Pluto also happens to be turning retrograde at the beginning of the week. So this week is going to have a very strong Plutonian feel to it. And so the lunar eclipse, as you know, is the period of time when the shadow is cast across the moon's face and the moon, which is a full moon, disappears from the sky. And eclipses, we have two. We have a solar eclipse and a lunar eclipse. And they're basically known as lights out in heaven. Okay, when a solar eclipse takes place during the day, for instance, when the moon passes in front of the sun, it goes dark, you know, and it doesn't go dark like a setting sun sort of way. It's almost as if someone dropped curtains, you know, and the light just falls. It just drops down into darkness. And this in ancient times was a very frightening event. It was this feeling of like, you know, who turned the light off in the sky? I mean, the sun is the most constant light that we have, and it's disappeared. And this is really frightening. And subsequently, the lunar eclipse, which is when the moon passes in front of the sun to make the solar eclipse, the earth passes in front of the moon. Its shadow is what makes the moon's light, full moon light, disappear from the sky. And in a society before electricity, the moon's light was just as important at night as the sun. So to all of a sudden be seeing this moonlight disappearing was a cause of great anxiety. And so they have had a reputation for being frightening, and people still respond to them that way. There are, I think it's done more out of festivity than real, you know, concern or anxiety, but there are certain countries around the world that still bang the pots and pans and send off firecrackers and make loud noises to scare away the demons, because it was believed that during the time of an eclipse, that's when the underworld had access to the surface world. And although those little beasties would sort of like sneak and slither out and cause all sorts of mischief or worse than that. So they would bang these drums and pans to scare them away, to ward them off. And so that was sort of the association or the reputation with eclipses, that they were sort of frightening times. And we didn't know if the light was going to come back. Well, because of astrology, actually, Hipparchus and Mayan civilizations, they had worked it out too. They had worked out cycles in which they could predict eclipses and pretty much how long they would last and that they would pass. And so that made everyone breathe a sigh of relief. You know, the light would come on back, and so they could go on and live their lives. But you can almost imagine, because it was always associated to a dragon, and especially in a lunar eclipse, when the shadow starts going across, it's almost like the mouth of a dragon is swallowing it. And it was believed that a dragon was swallowing the sun as well. So this is where they had these associations. Nowadays how we use it, but it actually has a very long and ancient tradition, eclipses were used to rectify your calendar. Okay, if you could predict an eclipse accurately and it took place, then your calendar, which I'm basically mean your astrology, was working. Okay, nowadays we go to an app and we look up an ephemeris and see what's going on with the planets, and okay, it's this and that and this and that. Well, back in the day, okay, you had to look at the sky a lot. Okay, and so when the people who kept the records, like for instance in Babylon, Sumer, but Babylon, definitely by Greece, people who kept the records, and they were able to predict, you know, a planetary motion, a heliacal rising setting, they were able to predict an eclipse. if they predicted the eclipse correctly, you know, that meant, oh, it took place on time. That's a good thing. That means our calendar is working. It's kind of like, think of a watch. Nowadays, we don't wind our watches, but there was a time when we would have a wristwatch and we would wind it to make sure that it was keeping time correctly. And eclipses were used in that regard to keep time correctly. And so if the eclipse didn't go off when it was supposed to, it was like, you know, get that astrologer over here. You know, it's off. Somebody's got to fix it. You know, that, you know, he's crazy, you know. So eclipses were used to rectify, to correct the calendar. And nowadays, as astrologers, we will use them to, they have a course correcting character still. All right. So a solar eclipse will be like, okay, you're doing this in your life, but now you need to be doing something else. And it will kind of like take over the wheel of your chart and head you in the direction that you're supposed to be going. Okay, so if you think of driving in a car, a solar eclipse is almost like looking at the road in front of you through the windshield, you know, and it says you have to go here if it impacts your chart. This is the direction you now need to be going in your life. You thought you were doing this, but now you need to go over here. Okay, so that's a solar eclipse moving forward. And a lunar eclipse, like what we're going to be experiencing, is you're looking at your life in terms of what needs to go, all right? And so a lunar eclipse asks one question, and pretty much one question only, which is, are you on iffy ground, all right? And how we address this question is basically we look at what was going on in our life 6 months previously. Okay, so a solar eclipse looks ahead for a year. I actually will give it two. Okay, but a lunar eclipse looks back at the last 6 months, all right? And is something that you began 6 months ago, like for instance, we're experiencing this in May. So we're talking November. Okay, is something that you began or started 6 months ago, is it working out? Did it pick up speed and does it have legs? You know, did it pick up speed? Is it producing or delivering in the way that it should be? Okay. And if it is, then the moon's like, that's cool. I'm all right with it. That's great. Okay. It's working. But if it isn't, like, I'm still waiting for him to call, or they never really got back to me, or I started this business, but more money's going out. This is the moon's way of saying cut ties, you know, because it's not going to take off in the way that you want. But if you've gotten some sort of promise, like he called, or there was a job interview, or some money actually is coming in, of course, you know, you'd love more. We'd all love more. But, you know, so if it's coming, then that means redouble your efforts. Okay. And so what you'll actually see almost ironically in a lunar eclipse is this is kind of when almost things that are meant to take off will take off. You know, because it's following the solar. But if it's still like, you know, going along in the slow lane and not really doing much of anything, it's the permission from the start to say, you know what? Cut ties, let it go. But the other thing that can happen, that's the stuff that you chose, okay, to work with. The other thing that can happen with lunar eclipses is things can suddenly unravel and fall apart. And one of the things to watch out for is health stuff and physical stuff, okay? Because the moon's the planet of the body, right? And so there could be health issues that suddenly come up during this period of time when the moon's light is disappearing in the sky. And it's a signal that you're on iffy ground. In other words, you know, you're not going to be at death's door or anything like that, but, you know, check in with that body. You know, the body is a clock too. So, you know, check in with that body and see how it's going. Because if it's starting to falter or suddenly unravel, you know, you might suddenly be susceptible to a cold or something like that. That's going to come out in the lunar eclipse as well. So if you see things suddenly unraveling or collapsing right now around this period of time, sometimes it's good, like, okay, like I need to move on and clear away dead wood. And that's a good thing. Thumbs up, you know? And sometimes it's like, I liked that relationship. What did you do with it? Like, bring it back, you know? So this is what the lunar eclipses can bring. They're, And their mission is to pretty much clear out the dead wood in order to make room for fresh growth.
Wow. That was an amazing, amazing explanation of both the solar eclipse and the lunar eclipse energy and the difference between them and how to work with them. So it sounds like this week, again, we're asking, are we on iffy ground? Yeah. There could be things that we're consciously choosing to let go of because we know that we're looking back to November, things that we might have started around then, if they haven't really taken off, if it's really just, you know, eking along, then maybe it's time to let go of it. If it is working, then it's time to double down our efforts and really put some more energy behind it and look for health things and look for course corrections that you might need to be making for your body and your health. There's something you said very early on that I'd love to hear more about.
Sure.
That this week has a strong Plutonian feel. So this particular lunar eclipse has a strong Plutonian feel. What do you mean by that? And how is that going to show up?
Pluto is the planet that's associated to the Lord of the Underworld. Okay, so Pluto is always what's going on underneath. Okay, and eclipses had a very strong reputation, especially in Mayan culture, of being a period of time in which, as I said before, the underworld was let loose, you know, onto the earth. And so what it referred to is things, it's a period of time in which things aren't right in the cosmos. You know, you wanted your underworld under and you wanted your world above, okay? And never did the two meet. And that's even continued on in Greek mythology, where astrology gets a lot of its symbolism and a lot of its mythological background. Pluto makes very rare appearances above ground. I think he appears above ground once, and that's to abduct Persephone. That's the only time that Pluto appears above ground. So the underworld is kept under and the above world is kept, you know, above and underworld free, that sort of thing. So, but we work with Pluto. Pluto's moved past being a prohibitive planet. You know, at first when it was introduced into astrology in 1930, it had some pretty heavy connotations, and it still carries some of those connotations. But the idea of descending down into the underworld, that's actually a theme that's very strong. It goes back to Mesopotamia. And we also have given a planet, Pluto, that sort of archetypal motif or energy or direction that we descend down into Pluto. So with Pluto having changed zodiac signs very recently, it's entered the zodiac sign of Aquarius. It's stopping in the sky and now it's moving back again. Okay, so that's kind of like the link there that's going on, that you know, what is it that's under the surface, but it's more than just under the surface. A planet is strongest, especially a modern planet. A modern planet, when I'm talking about a modern planet, I'm talking about planets discovered after 1781. We've got three of them. We have Uranus discovered in 1781, which upsets the classical planetary order. We have Neptune discovered in 1846. And we have Pluto discovered in 1930. Because the modern planets take such a long time to move through a zodiac sign, when they enter a sign, that's when they're extremely powerful, okay? And because they're just sort of like, they're entering into the sign, they're bringing all of their modern planet self with them, and then, you know, like anyone, whether it's a hotel room or you purchase a house or something like that, you enter and then you sort of have to get comfortable or maybe unpack things or whatever. And so that's what the modern planets are doing when they change signs like this. So Pluto is entering into Aquarius, but then it's stopping. It's like, you know what? I forgot something in the car. I have to go back to the car and I have to go get it before I can come in and settle into this wonderful hotel room that I'm going to be spending the weekend at. Okay, so Pluto's like, I have to leave. And so Pluto will be turning retrograde and it goes back down into Capricorn, stays there for a while, turns direct, and then it comes back into Pluto with conviction, with aplomb, with, you know, real commitment of purpose and these sorts of things. So we get a sense, we get a hint of things to come with Pluto having entered into Aquarius, but you just get a hint and then it kind of like subsides again. Now, this can be a little treacherous, okay? And the reason it can be a little treacherous is that it's kind of like, let's say you're leading a charge or something like that. We're all gonna have a talk to that cranky old neighbor or whatever, and we're coming together and he, hoses our kids whenever they walk by. And, I'm banding together the parents and we're gonna go take this person on. Okay. And so the neighbors get behind you and you're taking them on. And so maybe you knock on the door and the cranky person who, or maybe he's out there with a hose waiting for the kids, okay, to show up, and you show up to have this confrontation and you're like, right. And you look around and no one followed you. Okay. This is where planets making this entrance into a sign, particularly the moderns, and then they move back over. They lead you to believe, oh, hey, new beginning, new start, but then they left. They went back and you're kind of left kind of a little high and dry. And so that's where, if you're being impacted with Pluto having moved into Aquarius, particularly in an emboldened way, like let's say you're an air sign or fire sign, okay? Let's say you're Aries Sagittarius. Let's say you're Gemini Libra. This Pluto entering Aquarius is like, oh, this is the time to move forward. This is the time. I have purpose. I'm confronting that neighbor who keeps hosing down all my kids. Okay. You're moving on forward with this, but because it's turned around and left, it may be a false start. It may be a false beginning. And so you have to be careful with that. Subsequently, if you're 29 Capricorn, 29 Aries, 29 Cancer, 29 Libra, up to about, I think it's about maybe 28, 27, you may be feeling like you've had a false ending. Like, oh God, that Pluto finally got off my back, it finished its transit through my sign, I'm rid of it, And then you have Pluto almost knocking, not so fast, as it like comes back on in to visit you again. So, this Pluto between signs, okay, is something very much to pay attention to. Is my start as solid as I think it is? Is my ending as solid as I think it is? And if you sort of like open up the imagination here, you can see how kind of that lunar eclipse thing of things unraveling and falling apart is kind of playing into this. Is it a solid beginning or is it a solid ending? I mean, the simple way to think of it is in terms of timing. Am I free to move on with this Pluto energy? Am I free of Pluto, which is, and then it's coming back. So the thing is, be cautious and very sensitive to your circumstances and to what's going on right now. We do have a change, but it hasn't committed to the change yet. So it's kind of like the prelude before the beginning. And that's something to keep in mind for this week, especially if you experience all of a sudden a drop in support or, we were really into you, but this week, can we get back to you on that? That sort of thing. That might be some of what's coming up during this period of time.
So kind of like a stop, start energy or start, stop energy for some people and vice versa for other people.
Right. Where,
yeah. Okay. And is this because I'm just reflecting on the weekly weathers for like the last couple months, which have been so much about new beginnings and so much about like moving in brave new directions and really initiating change. And so is this saying, well, yeah, but not so fast? Or is this saying, or is it just like in a particular area of life only?
Have you ever had a guest, they stay for a period of time and then it's time for them to leave? You're like, oh, goodbye. Oh, it was so wonderful or whatever. And they're like, oh, actually, there's trouble at the airport or there's a snow in or whatever, or I'm going to have to stay 3 more days or a week or a. That's what the people at the last degrees of the cardinal signs feel like. Pluto, I'm back. You know, so it would be like, you know, and then, you know, the people who thought we were beginning, you know, it's not quite. So you'll feel the planet change. Ask any Taurus, ask any Leo, ask any Scorpio, ask any Aquarius, particularly born in the early days of those signs, about May 2018. Okay. They remember May 2018. Uranus entered Taurus. They know it. Okay. And there were a lot of changes that took place from that May, that June, that July. Then Uranus went back to Aries. And then it came back in again. Like, I think it was like maybe the January of 2019. So, you know, planets, when they're between signs like this, it's not a sort of like, hello, you know, it's not a debut, you know, it's not a once over the threshold. Okay, so that's something that I'm saying to keep in mind. I'm not saying don't do those things, you know, but what I'm saying is keep an eye on the circumstances and keep an eye on how solid, you know, your ground is here, because it may, there is such a thing as overconfidence in beginning something. This is the thing that, okay, so don't be overly confident that way. And I'm not saying because you've got this dark cloud over you, I'm just saying be careful, you know, about that. You know, if you're starting something, guide it, you know, be involved in it, you know, be aware that, you know, it may start and then it may start to recede, because this is what Pluto or any modern is going to do, you know, and then it moves back over that threshold again. And we live in a society that doesn't like that, right? Yeah. You know, we're like, hey, you know, and especially for the Capricorns, what, 2009? That's a long time to have Pluto going through your sign, you know. But that's what Pluto does. It teaches Capricorns to be more patient than they already are.
The 29-degree sun Capricorn is saying, yes, I understand.
You're like, I want my damn fresh start.
I was promised a fresh start.
I was promised a fresh start. And I want it.
I'm getting robbed. Okay. So, but basically what I'm hearing now is that there's a cautiousness because there's more to come. Like there's more information, there's more experience, there's more closing up, there's more something.
We don't know the strength of the planet, okay? Planets are stronger than we are, yeah. Okay? And planets, and I've said this before, you know, in talks with you, imagine the way that you handle, like, have you ever seen like a little insect and you're like, oh, I want to take this outside, and you try to, you know, handle the insect or maybe put something around it or whatever and move it outside, and you know, that's planets with our lives. They handle us with fumbling hands, okay? Particularly when it comes to the moderns. They can, you know, they can be, they're stronger than we think they're going to be, all right? And so that's what I'm sort of saying. That's what I mean by being careful or being sensitive. Because when Pluto comes rolling through, Pluto is going to come rolling through, and it's going to be powerful. The last time Pluto was in Aquarius, okay, we had the discovery of a new planet, Uranus, okay. Uranus has a birth chart, and it happens to be celebrating its Pluto return. Okay, so we had a planet that we discovered, Uranus, that threw over everything we knew, all right, followed by a U.S. Constitution, okay, Pluto's discovered in the last years of the Age of Enlightenment. And the Age of Enlightenment was all about reason and science. And it was all about lifting the way that people lived into a more enlightened, ordered society that was democratic and benefited people, in which they had a voice in government. And it was this idea of like, we're getting rid of, you know, the world is a veil of tears. The Enlightenment is about happiness. That's the phrase, pursuit of happiness in the Declaration of Independence. So the two things that come out of the Age of Enlightenment that had never been done before is a U.S. Constitution. There had never been a government founded on philosophical principles before, okay, and a French Revolution, the overthrow of a culture, of a government that had been there for, that had been built up over centuries. And this was all done in the name of reason. This was all done in the name of democracy. This was all done in completely reshuffling the way a society and a world works, okay? Aquarius is a utopian sign, okay? Its dream is of the perfect society. And all utopian visions are strong on aspiration and sort of like look past the consequences. Okay, so we have these dynamics that are coming forward. So we are entering into a new age, but new ages are new. Like, they're new. And we don't really always know what to expect. And they bring as many questions as they bring visions and hopes and promises. So this is us for the next, I think it's 24 years, but Pluto is strongest entering and leaving sign, okay, as people born under those signs are experiencing, okay? And Pluto doesn't know its own strength, and we don't know its power yet. So that's why I'm saying when you begin these things, normally we begin things on a lunar cycle, right? Or Jupiter's well aspected, or even an eclipse is showing me a beginning. Now you're dealing with the sumo wrestler of all the planets in astrology, you know, who's moving on into another sign, you know, and it's packing a lot of power. And we have to adjust to that, to understand that, you know, that's what I'm saying.
Okay. So that already we have a powerful week ahead. Because we have the lunar eclipse, which is already powerful. And then we have all this Pluto non-action. It's like actually stopping to go back, right? Is that where we're at in its cycle?
Yeah, but remember that just because someone stopped to, you know, go, it's kind of like, what's that story that some people tell, you know, where the kid jumps into the father's arms and catches the kid, and the kid gets up and laughs and jumps into the father's arms, and the father catches the kid, and kid wants to do it one more time, and they jump into the father's arms, and the father lets the kid drop. And the kid's like, and the father's like, because you need to know what life is like. I don't know. I think a Catholic Jesuit told that story or something once. But yeah, that's it. You're under the impression that Pluto's filled your sails.
Yeah.
But you retrograde and then going back. So it's like a.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. Fascinating. All right. What else do we have this week?
Well, nothing's ever negative just by itself or anything along those lines. You know, there are always other planets that are going about their business as well. And what we have this week also as well is Venus-Jupiter sextile, okay, which is going to be really quite lovely. Any aspect involving the benefics is a really, really wonderful thing. That follows a Venus-Neptune square. I want to sort of talk about that a little bit. Actually, I sort of jumped onto that, but we've got a Venus flavor that's going through the week as well. Okay. And so that's going to deal with your relationships and the way that you get along with people and what you attract into your life. First of all, we've got a Mercury Kazemi that is an exact conjunction of the Sun and Mercury in the zodiac sign of Taurus. Okay. Taurus is ruled by Venus. Okay. So if we've got Mars and Pluto energy coming up with the Scorpio, we've got Venus energy that's going on with the Taurus. And so this is actually a very interesting placement. And this one, maybe everyone wants to get out dates, or some people, if it's of interest, want to get out dates and sort of see how this works. On April 21st, when Mercury turned retrograde, it was really, really close to Uranus. Okay. And so that might have shown up in the lives of people who are like Taurus, Virgo, Capricorn, for instance, maybe even the Mercury ruled signs like Gemini, along with Virgo, in which you might have been anticipating what was supposed to be maybe a breakthrough, maybe even a breakdown, okay, because we're talking about Uranus. Okay, so it was getting close to it, you know, something that might have been like a sort of game-changing event. And then that's the moment when Mercury turned retrograde, it walked away from it again. Christopher, with those retrogrades, the promise of new beginnings and walking back again. Sorry, I'm just reading the planets in the sky. Don't hate me. But anyway, so Mercury turned retrograde back from it. And so it was like, I thought that was supposed to be, you know, breakthrough, or I thought that was, you know, and it just kind of like faded. Okay. Mercury comes to a Kazemi point. It's still backwards, and it conjoins the sun. And Kazemi is an exact conjunction. It's a medieval borrowing of a Persian term, but that's not really a Persian term. But anyway, it's medieval. And it's this idea of being within the heart of the sun. The planet becomes splendid. Okay. So this might work as very sensational news. Okay. This Kazemi on May 1st, something that might be sensational. But it may also be in terms of telling you why it didn't work before. Okay, so because it's a backwards motion of the retrograde. So you're discovering why it didn't work before. Okay. And this is sort of like gonna give you perspective, or it's gonna be like, oh well, you know, I dodged the bullet on that one. So there's something revealing about it. But it's not until June 5th. When Mercury actually makes that conjunction, it's come out of retrograde. When Mercury actually makes that conjunction to Uranus, it's not until June 5th in which what was supposed to happen happens. Okay. So basically, I'm sort of talking about a delay. Okay. Something was supposed to launch, but there was a Mercury retrograde, didn't come together. Realization or enlightenment or finding out about things on May 1st. And then, okay. Now we're ready to move forward with this, you know, and this is more ephemeral because Mercury rules over ephemeral day-to-day things, unlike Pluto, which rules over larger decisions or larger movements in your life. The Venus-Neptune square, Venus is in Gemini and Neptune is in Pisces. And so what you always want to do with a square is sort of like list ideas that side up with each of these planets. And so what I kind of figured out or what I kind of feel that this might be is that the Venus in Gemini might be becoming increasingly more ambivalent about a situation. Okay. And so this might affect the air signs, Gemini, Libra, Aquarius, the Venus signs, Taurus and Libra. But I'm kind of thinking the air signs, and there might be something, a situation, a relationship situation in which there's ambivalence as to whether you really want to proceed with it or not. And there may be a feeling of ambivalence on the other side, you know, as well. Neptune is super ambivalent. You bring in a square and it's kind of like, yeah, maybe, you know, it can be ambivalent. But what's nice is that Venus is then sextiled by Jupiter. Jupiter is in Aries. Jupiter and that sextile takes place later on that day. So Jupiter on May 4th. And so Jupiter in Aries is anything but ambivalent. It's like, okay, go, you know, come on, let's go. Let's move forward with this already. You know that you want this. So, you know, there might be a little bit of like ambivalence about an association. And then either the reason for your ambivalence becomes revealed at the end of the day on May 4th because you were waiting for something else or someone else. Or it's a kind of like, you know, the person says, you know, whether it's a business thing or a romantic thing, the person says the thing you've been waiting to hear. And so you feel like, okay, I can go forward with this now. You know, so that's going to be the nature of that type of energy.
Okay. So we have Venusian energy kind of softening up a little bit, this, the lunar eclipse, Pluto action that's happening. What else? So I know there's a couple other things that you wanted to unpack for us this week.
I think I got to the highlights and then highlights. And then Venus enters Cancer at the end of the week. So okay, you got me thinking. That again, we've got stuff that's going on right at the beginning of something, right at the beginning of a sign. Pluto enters Aquarius, it turns around, it goes back into Capricorn. And then what's interesting is that we have this square and sextile taking place with Venus when it's about to change signs. Okay, so I have a sense that a lot of this week is probably going to be caught up with, do I really want to end what I'm ending? Do I feel really supported in what I'm beginning? You know, and so I would almost say that's how I would almost like describe, you know, the week, because then, you know, Pluto's heading back down into Capricorn and Venus is heading forward into Cancer. So I think that that people might find themselves a little bit like, you know, do I really want to end what I'm ending, or do I really want to begin what I'm beginning? Do I feel solid enough? Do I feel confident enough with this?
And will we get clarity on those questions?
Well, when Venus enters Cancer, yeah, you get clarity right there. It's into a new sign. Okay, so you know, with those relationship dilemmas and things like that, there will be clarity. There's certainly going to be clarity on anyone who is expecting something to come together around the time of the Mercury retrograde. There's the Mercury Kazemi, so there's clarity in terms of like why it didn't work. So right. There's clarity there. With Pluto, that's still kind of, you know, hey, where'd you go? You know, type of thing. That one, you know, that's just really about being careful with moving support. Whenever a planet retrogrades back out again, there's always a timing issue with what you're dealing with. Was it a false beginning? Was it a false ending? And then how do you, and that doesn't make it a disaster. It's like if you've ever been on stage and you're doing a scene with someone, you know, and you're like, well, Lolly, what do we do next? You know, and that's Lolly's entrance, but Lolly's like, you know, nosebleed on the curtains, like, you know, sort of signaling from off stage. And you're like, well, Lolly must be lollygagging. You know, I mean, you kind of like have to improvise on the spot. So this isn't calamitous, but you may find yourself, for the people who are kind of looking forward to their new beginnings with that Pluto, you might find yourself kind of like improvising on the spot, you know, until Pluto really gets behind you again and determined again, which is going to be later on in the year in January.
Okay. And for those who love the like day-to-day breakdown that we sometimes do because of like the movement of the moon, what's the moon doing this week? And is there anything for us to pay attention to in terms of the rhythm of the week with that?
Well, the moon's big thing is the lunar eclipse, you know, like nothing, right. nothing compares to that, you know. So that's, you know, the big event that's taking place with the moon. I think that because the moon rules over your day-to-day affairs and the things that you're doing every day, it's going to be, well, it's, let's take the themes that we discussed in that lunar eclipse, because it just doesn't happen on the day of the eclipse.
Okay? Which is when? Wait, what is the actual day of the eclipse?
I'm sorry. The day of the actual lunar eclipse is May 5th. Okay.
Okay. And what time?
I think I'm like on an Eastern time. So I've got it at like 1:34.
P.M.?
P.M. Yeah. Okay. In the afternoon.
Okay.
Like, let's take some of the themes of the, the 2 weeks that head up to an eclipse, you can feel the eclipse approaching. Okay. I always circle off the 2 weeks before the eclipse.
Well, and does that start the 2 weeks before the first eclipse in the series? Cause we just had the solar eclipse, right?
You're going to have 2 weeks in front of the solar eclipse, and then lunar eclipse rules over different things. So you've got the 2 weeks in front of the lunar eclipse.
Okay. Okay.
So how I like to work with the lunar eclipse is in the run-up. Let's say, for instance, okay, I mentioned before that the moon is the planet of the body, and there might be physical issues, okay? We see that the moon is in Virgo for that Sunday and Monday that precedes it. So that might be something in which physical issues are coming up, making themselves known, okay? That doesn't mean you collapse in the middle of a bank or something like that and have to be carried away. It just means like something doesn't feel right or you know what? I have to really go see about why I'm getting these dry skin patches. You know, it's just they're driving me crazy and now I need to go and see. So that might be an increase in that, you know, as we're heading towards the lunar eclipse. The thing that comes to mind with the moon in Libra, which is going to be Tuesday and Wednesday, that's probably going to, if you're having anything to do with contracts or contract signing, that is going to be something very much to pay attention to because, you know, there may be something in the details or the addenda that you want to pay strict attention to. So Libra is always associated to contracts and it's always associated to agreements. And then as we go into the lunar eclipse itself, the moon enters Scorpio on May 4th, and then we have the eclipse on the 5th. Remember that sort of ambivalence I was talking about with the Venus squaring the Neptune? That may be when those ambivalent feelings are actually really coming out and being very strong. And so if you're in relationships or associations that you feel like are a little iffy or whatever, this isn't really the time to go and like have it out. I don't believe in taking great actions before an eclipse. I don't think it's a good idea, because the ground, that theme of iffy ground is there. All right. So this might be, you know, bringing up a lot of Scorpio types of feelings, which is, it could be grievances, things from the past that you're still angry about or hurt about. And so it can sort of bring that up to the surface, and it can make someone really, really, you know, yes, if you have a grievance or a problem, one should address and talk about that. But there are good times to address talking about that, and not such good times to address and talk about that. And that's something that, you know, and that's why I was sort of saying, you know, maybe later on you hear from someone and they say something reassuring, and then you can be like, oh, that was reassuring. That was a good thing. That makes me feel good. That's good. But you don't really want to confront or bring that, not when the moon's light is being eclipsed or darkened like that. It's just not. What I would advise is, if you feel frustration or angry or whatever, on May 4th or 5th, grab a pan and a wooden spoon, you know, and go out into the backyard and just slam it. Work it out.
That's so good. Christopher, the most amazing thing. So I've never noticed this with your camera, but just today, as we've been talking about the eclipse, it's sort of like shifted in tone. It'll go from like a warm tone to a cooler tone, but it's like this light play that's happening with this eclipse conversation. I am marveling at how perfect it is for what we're discussing. So tell us a little bit, now that we have this lay of the land, I mean, well, actually, one more question. You say don't take great action before an eclipse. Do we take great action after the eclipse? Like if we get cleared through the eclipse about some of these iffy situations, and we're like, okay, it's time to let go of that thing, is after the eclipse the time to do it?
Yeah. I would recommend that. See where you are, and then you can proceed.
Yeah.
An eclipse is kind of like, think of an eclipse as another way to think of an eclipse. Okay. There's a fire truck behind you. Okay. You don't keep driving faster. You pull over, right? You pull over and you let the truck pass. That's kind of the way that I find is a good way to work with the eclipses. There's a reason why. There's a reason why for centuries, people were going inside their houses, you know, and shutting the doors and windows, that people were told, don't look at the sun, you know, because the moon is in front of it, but those lights around the sun are even more dazzling. Okay. And they were told, don't look at the sun, go inside, wait it out, you know?
Yeah.
And quite frankly, I've adopted that same idea with handling eclipses. Remember, eclipses, as they are triggering your chart, you know, this message is really for the people who have sun or moon or any major planet around, let's take in the solar eclipse, a 29 cardinal. Because on that very same day, you had Sun-Pluto square. Okay, so that's yet to emerge, right? Okay, so on that very day, you had that. And then because this lunar eclipse is taking place at 15 degrees Scorpio, okay, if you've got anything at 15 Scorpio, 15 Aquarius, 15 Taurus, 15 Leo, you're going to want to pay attention to that. CEO Carter from Britain was, I think it was president of the Astrological Lodge of London or something like that, always gave eclipses a very, very tight orb, like 2 to 3 degrees.
Okay.
So if you're within 2 to 3 degrees of those degrees that I just mentioned, take extra care. And if you're not, go about your day, or, you know, if it were a solar eclipse, like wear those glasses. But yeah, you know, it's not going to impact you as much. But I have seen it impact very strongly on those zodiacal points.
Wow. And impact for you with eclipses, is impact usually mean something sort of perceived as negative, or could it be like something that's perceived as positive?
Eclipses can be positive. I mean, I've seen them have, it's kind of like, you got this job and it's in London and it's starting in a month. Go, it's everything you wanted. And it's like, okay, I have to tell people I've been working with for 20 years, or I have to tell is my family on? The planets are just going to do it in their time. They're like, it's great, isn't it? You know, and you're the one who's downstairs on the planet Earth, who's got to like, wait, no, I've got concerns and I've got to take care of things. And can I sell the house at a profit, or do I rent, or, you know, it's like that.
Okay.
So yeah. when it comes in good like that, it's good, but there's always, you know, like.
Yeah. But it shakes and rattles. And I mean, like things are changing very dramatically. It's not just like a little easing into something new.
No.
Right. Okay.
No, okay. It's not like the moon entering a sign or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's very, very dramatic change. And that's the way that they'll register.
Sounds like a huge week for many of us. So this will be really interesting to see how it all plays out. And Christopher, can you please tell us about your upcoming course? So we are doing a 3-week course with Christopher on ruling planets for unruly times. I love the title. It's so you. It's like, what are the students going to be learning?
What the students are going to be learning is about the ruling planet. There are a lot of different systems and histories and things like that concerning the planet that rules you, whether it's the ruler of the chart, the ruler of the hour, the ruler of a horary, you know, all these sorts of things. But something that I had discovered through research and began applying as a technique, so hopefully it appeals, but that I work with the ruling planet as being the planet that rules your sun sign. And what your ruling planet basically is your patron saint, your corporate sponsor, your den mother, and your life coach, all wrapped up into one, okay? So if you're born under Taurus, for instance, your ruling planet is Venus. So you're on Team Venus, okay? You and Libra are on Team Venus, okay? If you're born under Aries or Scorpio, you're on Team Mars, okay? And so this planet really becomes your guardian, okay? I will work with the ruling planet as much as I work with the sun, the moon, and the ascendant. The fourth part that I put on in is the ruling planet, the planet that rules the sun. And it's looking out after your interests. Yes, people born under Pluto is looking out after your interests. Or if you're born under Saturn is looking out after your interests. And you can rely on your planet to do that. Even if your planet is going through a rough patch of sky, if the planet is going through a rough patch of sky, you know that there's going to be a rough patch that you're going through because that's where the planet is. But at the same time, it's still protecting. It's still doing what it can do to help you. If the planet is well placed, you know, let's say it's trining your sun or it's very well placed, then that planet is very, very benevolent, even if it's a malefic like Mars or Saturn. And if it's going through a part of sky that's really difficult, it's still doing its best to help you out. So the ruling planets really were connected to where you appeared in society. They were associated with that. There was a tradition called the Children of the Planets that was begun in Islam, and that made its translation over into Europe when astrology got reintroduced onto the European climate. And Children of the Planets would talk about really that it was the planet, your ruling planet, that was important, not the zodiac signs. So we think of it as being all about the zodiac signs, but the idea of a sun sign, right, or identifying with your sun, that's maybe 120-ish years old. Before then, you said, I was born under Venus. I'm a child of Saturn. Mars is my guiding star. Okay, so it was that ruling planet that you got your temperament and you got your talents and you got your abilities and you got your fallibilities all from that planet. And what it really sort of does, it like sort of allows you to get to know about your cosmic sponsor upstairs. So we're going to be getting into the background of the planets. You know, a lot of times we have like keywords and planet represents this and that. But oftentimes people will say to me, well, why? Why does it represent that? And why is that associated? Why is it Venus and not, you know, Jupiter or something like that? And you're going to find out why. I mean, there was a long history about that. And then what's also exciting is that it applies itself to the modern planets. How did we come up with revolution and change for Uranus? How did we come up with illusion, disillusionment for Neptune? How did we come up with transformation for Pluto? Okay. And the particular challenge of the modern planets, you know, before astrologers had centuries of what this planet meant. Okay. But with the moderns, you had to sort of observe and watch. And one of the things that people used was, well, what coincided at the time of the modern planet's discovery? What was going on in society? What was going on in the world? And you can see, and you'll find out what was going on when Uranus was discovered. What was going on when Neptune was discovered that it informed Neptune like this? What was going on when Pluto was discovered? So this is a way of really getting into the heavenly choir of the planets and really getting to know them on their own basis, not glommed together in a chart, you know, and also getting to know your own personal planet, which is doing its level best to make the best life for you that it possibly can.
I had to smile when thinking about Saturn as den mom. An actual den mom. That is funny. Who is this perfect for? Like what kind of student, what level of student?
I think it's perfect for honestly everyone, you know, because you're going to be finding out things that I don't know if you know about the planet, you know, and how it came to be. So I think it's really, really open to everyone, but it's not about techniques. So I want to get that right off the bat. This is not about techniques. This is not about formula or anything like that, because that takes up a lot of air or time with the planet, you know, but the Venus is aspecting. Let's get into Venus,
right?
You know, right. Get into Mars. Who's Mars?
Yeah.
You know, Venus is Venus, no matter what sign she's going through, but Venus is going to have 12 different, you know, outfits, just right. Like the 12 different, you know, signs of the zodiac. So we're really going to be getting into that. And then I think it's really going to open up the way that you look at the planets and understand them.
I love it. Okay. So if you're interested in that, we would love to have you. You can go to astrologyhub.com/rulingplanets. If you're an Inner Circle member, make sure that you put in your discount code so you can get your membership discount. But it's available. You can learn more about it. You can join us for part of it is pre-recorded. And then there are live segments as well. All of the live segments are also going to be recorded, and you'll have access to those within 24 hours. We have amazing visuals and all the wonderful things to make this come to life. And so we would love to have you join us for that. And Christopher, thank you so much for teaching with us. We're so grateful to have you as part of our community. It's like this guiding light with us all the time. So thank you for that. Thank you for this weekly weather. You're just such a joy always.
You're such a joy. And I love this community. I love saying hi to everyone on Horoscope Highlights. And, you know, it's just so delightful. And I'm just so honored and just delighted that I can participate in Astrology Hub. It means so very, very much to me.
Oh, and to us too. Thank you. Thanks to all of you for being here. Thank you for being a part of our community. Thank you, as always, for making astrology a part of your life. Cannot wait to catch you on the next episode. Take care, everybody.
This podcast is presented by Astrology Hub. You can learn more and find all of our shows at astrologyhub.com/podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and hit subscribe on your favorite podcast platform so you can stay up to date on the latest episodes and help more people find the wisdom of astrology. Thank you for taking the time to do this now. Thank you for being a part of our community and for making astrology a part of your life.